Andy Gray, striker, commentator, and naughty boy. We previously read his 1986 book, Shades of Grey, but today we're reading his follow-up book, Grey Matters. So let's see what the book club and special guest, the Athletic and Football Clichés, Adam Hurry, thought of it in today's Football Book Club.
Huge Andy Gray stan, so I'm always going to read his book.
Thank you very much. Great sonata.
He's told us twice that he likes to watch poor people at a bus station.
Whether I'd have become another Bill Gates, we'll never know.
Cool. Hello! That's how I'm going to start
cool.
Episodes now.
Yeah,
cool. Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each episode we read another footballer's autobiography. Less Infinite Jest, more Leon Best.
And oh, for God's sake.
Adam, I warned you about the pun before I did it, which I rarely do.
I wasn't expecting the second half of it, I have to say. It could have been anybody, but Leon Best, yeah, fine, acceptable.
Okay.
I think that's the first time we've had a title rather than author.
Yes, yeah. It's usually, William Shakespeare, Craig Shakespeare, Jane Austen, Dean Austen, that kind of thing. But yeah.
Good change
of
gear.
Keep going.
Yeah. We got to change it up. Got to spice it up a little bit occasionally. Thank you to Halcyon Publishing for that one. A publishing house, apparently. Wow. That cool. thank you.
You'd think, given that they have so many books at their disposal,
yeah,
they'd be able to find a better one. But
they
here
might
we
send,
are.
They could just send the obscure ones that we never heard of that they publish. Yeah. Compare it to books that conveniently rhyme with Dave Kitson. Anyway, I'm James Bug, and over the weeks, we'll be reading classics such as Graham Lasseau's Left Field and John Gregory's The Boss. But today, we are reading our second Andy Gray book, 2004's Grey Matters. And joining me to read it are Jack Bernhardt.
Hello.
And welcome to the show. The Athletic writer, editor, and host of the brilliant podcast Football Clichés is Adam Hurry.
Hello, both. How are you doing?
Very good. Great to have you on, Adam. How are you?
I'm really good. Really good. I'm looking forward to this. This is the first time I've read a book in its entirety for about a decade. So this is going to be good.
Any book.
Any book. My attention span is horrendous. Horrendous.
But within that decade, you've written a book. Right.
Yeah, but I've read it.
Well, why would you read it?
That's very much the same as most footballers who write their own autobiographies that we found out, as Pat Nevin revealed to us. He's read his one. But
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Pat Nevin's a reader. Oh, he reads. He reads. So the next question I was going to ask was, big fan of footballers' autobiographies?
Well, actually, oddly enough, I mean, there's so much admin and HR involved in footballers' autobiographies. I mean, apart from a few outliers, like, I don't know, the Paddy Kennys of this world. There's just so much kind of, I thought about leaving here. The manager told me I was being sold from there. I just signed a new contract here. And then I suddenly realised there was no future for me. Once you strip all of that out, you're not really left with much. Because that's basically football, you know, coming and going.
Yep.
In many ways.
Adam, are you saying that it's an incredibly tedious process?
Because I think it actually might be. I mean, you can't, if you're writing a book about your career as a footballer, you can't not sort of talk about the steps that you take from one club to another. So it's kind of, it's filler, but it's kind of necessary. It's admin and it has to be done. So once you filter that out, you're left with the good stuff.
See, I agree and I disagree with you because I think it's also possible to do this. I think people should have these books and at the front, they should say, read my Wikipedia article.
Yeah.
And then
before
come
you
back
go into this
because it's going to save a lot of time
for everybody. Exactly.
I mean, have we read any ones that have really played with the format at all? Have we read any ones that I know that there's one of Roy Keane's dog as an autobiography of Triggs, Trigger, I think it was, his dog was called.
Wow.
Someone's written,
I say
autobiography, that can't be right because
it might be an autobiography. You never know.
Who knows?
It might be
it's
as ghostwritten.
One. This is a spook. Well, obviously not a real one. I don't know why I want to say that.
I don't think Roy Keane sat down and wrote this. It was like a great idea for a book. So basically, that was a way of you saying, Adam, that no, you're not a huge fan of these books.
I don't think I've ever read a footballer's autobiography before. I don't think I have. I mean, but I'm. To be honest, I'm quite relieved because at the start of this process, there was a brief tense moment where I was penciled in to read Lee McCulloch's Simply the Best.
Yes.
And I'm really glad we renegotiated because I haven't got time to read Lee McCulloch's Simply the Best. I'm sorry.
Fair enough.
And yet you have time to read this book.
Oh, no.
Baffling.
huge Andy Gray stan, so I'm always going to read his book. Yeah. That was always going to happen.
tell me, Adam, what is it that fascinates you so much about Andy?
I mean, I am required by law to caveat about the unpleasantness, so let's set that aside.
Yeah. Imagine if I just take that out in the edit.
It doesn't matter. People just assume now. It's like, it's there. And yeah. I don't need the caveat, quite frankly. he was commentating on football right at the time where it entered mainstream, really proper in the Premier League at least, entered mainstream kind of awareness. And his way of expressing himself about football was exactly what I wanted to hear, mm-hmm. both in terms of its sheer oozing masculinity and also its appreciation of the kind of visceral side of football. Yes, he's a reasonably astute tactician in a media sense, but he also just really enjoys, you know, the thrust of a ball going into a net. And he explains it better than anyone I've ever heard.
In the book?
No,
James.
He talks about punditry a lot, but in the book. But
I see what you mean. He's a loud man. That's for sure. Yeah. He's a very, very, very loud man, which helps with that kind of that bombasticness.
Yeah, he's got a great voice.
He does have a great voice. He does have a great voice. I mean, say what you want about Andy Gray, but voice-wise, untouchable.
Yeah,
untouchable.
True.
Yeah. And Lee McCulloch. Sorry about that. That was just a suggestion because we've wanted to read it for a long time.
Sorry, I didn't realize you gave guests the option. And I feel cheated at this point.
And
I
gave God.
But I've had to sit through so many books.
Well, in a way,
my will.
I found it quite endearing in a way because, I mean, you know, any podcast like this, I would expect to kind of focus on elite level players and their autobiographies, which can be quite stale affairs. But, you know, I'm stunned by the array of names you've had so far. Ivo Graham reading Neil Redfern's There's Only One Neil Redfern is the most surreal moment so far. But this is exactly where you should be pitching it.
He chose that. I think we sent him I've got a master list of hundreds and hundreds of autobiographies. And I sent him that. And I think he went, well, it's Neil Redfern, obviously. I think straight away honed in on that. Okay. Just like, I think he's a Swindon fan. Nothing to do with Swindon. Yeah, so... There we go. Well, you know, we haven't got time. Much like you haven't got time for Lee McCulloch, but we haven't got time for the I Am Zlatans and Perlow books of the world. No. Gimme Gary Monk any day of the week.
Yes, please. More Gary Monk, please.
Okay. Sadly, he hasn't got a second book, but Andy Gray does, and we're going to delve into it now. Let's read Gray Matters. Okay, then, over the show, we're going to go into more depth about the book. We'll have a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end, and our friend Ken Zong is back with another chant. But first, let's see what Amazon is saying. Do we think it's been kindly reviewed on Amazon? What do we think?
I'm expecting sort of underwhelmed readers.
I'm finding it hard to know who would buy this book.
Yeah.
Like, usually with these things, you're like, oh, I bought, you know, my son's a big Man United fan, so I bought Wayne Rooney's book and he loved it.
My son loves Andy Gray.
My son is a huge Sky Sports subscriber.
Yeah. He hates content, but he loves the commentary around it.
Yeah. Yeah. the book has 3.8 stars from 15 reviews. Not massively well read, this one.
How many of them are after the unpleasantness, out of interest?
That is a good question. So this book came out in 2004.
Yeah.
When did the unpleasantness was what, 2010?
Yeah, 2011, maybe? Yeah, around that.
Yeah, around that, yeah. I don't know. I didn't go into that much depth. I'm sorry, Jack, I've let you down. I didn't look into these things too much. But Andrew Walker is one of them, and he gave a pretty smarmy review entitled Grey is not the most exciting colour in the paint box. The review...
I enjoy it. That's good.
It's smarmy, but it is good. The review is almost as long as the book itself. So I've got an abridged version here. I was hoping for either an intelligent read, brackets encouraged by the title, Grey Matters, get it? Very snarky, this guy. Some good anecdotes or some of the on-screen humour. I came away with naught of the three. Humour? I'm not sure Gray's TV personality really transfers to the page. Away from the banter, he comes across as having a bit of a high opinion of himself. Brackets. And that's probably why he's a millionaire and married to Susan Dando, and I'm not. You're not the heads at the high opinion bit. I think he could be on something here. But it isn't necessarily likable. Also, be prepared for the plugs for his current employer. It would have been simpler just to have a Sky TV logo on the top left-hand corner of every screen. Sorry, Paige. He's a funny guy.
I like this guy. He should be on the podcast.
Yeah,
he should
be too withering. This is too withering. Give the book a chance.
Yeah, I agree.
As someone who has now read two Andy Gray books in 2021, I am not willing to give Andy Gray books a chance.
There's no more plays on his surname left, are there?
I don't think so. No.
That we can do for a third book. I mean, a third book would be good. I would definitely
Adam,
read the
what
third.
Are you doing? Why are you giving him the idea of a third book?
Because it could encompass the last 10 years, which is way more interesting.
It could be Gray doesn't matter anymore.
Because
Gray matters. And the answer, like, Gray matters. No, he doesn't.
Yeah. That kind of relies on you being very familiar with the already the catalogue of Andy Gray books.
Enola Gray.
Oh yeah.
Gray. In Doha Gray.
Oh, yeah. That's good. That's where he's living now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
In Doha Gray.
I'll ghostwrite it.
That is too good a title, I would say, for these books. But Adam, do you agree with Andrew Walker, the snarky Andrew Walker?
Well, the best point he makes in that review, which I don't think is necessarily a pejorative one about the book, is that Andy Gray does have a very high opinion of himself, but it's not Keezy level egotism. It's a kind of undercurrent of self-confidence that pervades the entire book from the very start as a kind of 17-year-old at Dundee United all the way through to his Sky career. It's this kind of just bubbling sense of I'm really good at this, but it's not vulgar. It's genuinely not throughout the whole book. It's just the right amount of self-confidence you'd expect from someone who has hit the reasonable heights of two professions. So I was happy with it, but there are some very good standout moments of his self-confidence.
Yes. Jack, pretty much all the way through that was shaking his head.
I was doing the Sunes, like sitting there going furiously.
Waiting to jump in.
No, I mean, I know what you mean. And he is, you know, he is a very confident man.
Mm.
I think there is a level at which it becomes quite like unlikable.
Okay.
Personally, but then I think that's also because, as I say, I feel like I've spent a long time with Andy Gray at this point, and I'm less willing to put up with his foibles.
Mm.
I'm done with Gray. I'm furious with him.
Adam, you want to come back to that?
Well, I mean,
why are you starting this into a debate? What are you doing?
I'm just sitting back. It's like fighting talk. I'm Colin Murray, just watching you two go at it about this guy.
Well, I mean, the book kicks off straight away with a very unlikely scene with his 13-year-old daughter, Sophie, coming into the room and saying, "So you were a footballer then, Daddy?" Which, come on.
Oh, for God's sake.
Two things here. How has he kept it from her for 13 years? Two, why does she talk like a four-year-old?
Yes. Yeah.
I believe that as soon as Sophie came into this world, Andy Gray yelled, "I played for Everton, Aston Villa, and West Bromwich Albion" at her.
Yeah. Like, I spoke to her. All the bedtime stories for 5 years were stories at length about his niggling knee injuries in the first quarter of his career.
Yeah, now especially when Uncle Richard Keys came round to
Or the tale of the evil ogre Ron Saunders. Like, I mean, like I find it very hard to believe that he kept anything from her. Yeah, you're right. It's just nonsense, that bit.
Talking of hard to believe, and weighing in on this subject of ego, which you've gone through. I don't know if he wrote. I'm guessing he didn't write the tagline on the very front of the book. But did you notice it says Gray Matters, Andy Gray, from penalty box to commentary box, the face of modern football tells his remarkable story. The face of modern football. Would you describe Andy Gray at any point in history as the face of modern football?
No.
I agree.
Great voice.
If anything, it's the voice of modern football.
Voice.
Yeah.
Voice of modern football. I can see that.
I think I, for a long time, didn't know what Andy Gray looked like. And I think I was quite surprised by what he looked like in the end. Like when you sort of when you listen to a podcast for ages, and then someone goes like, "Oh, and here's my face," and you're like, "What the hell? It doesn't look at all like the voice you're expecting."
I mean, I told you, Jack, that Adam. I don't know if you're familiar with the 90s DJ Bruno Brooks.
Yes.
Was it? Yeah, I couldn't believe how much Bruno Brooks looks like Andy Gray when he was younger.
That's a freaking point.
He really does. It's uncanny. I sent a picture to Jack.
Very clean, sort of genuinely quite clean features, but a face that looked like it was carved from rock.
Granite? Yeah.
Granite. Yeah, it's always granite, isn't it?
Yeah, that is.
I don't know. I mean, his voice and his style pervades football culture, but his face, I mean, not that many people had Sky Sports subscriptions. It felt like a luxury to have a Sky Sports subscription mid to late 90s.
I went around my grandma's to watch it.
I wouldn't call him ubiquitous, yeah. But
But
his influence, nonetheless.
I think, I mean, he definitely did change football. And I suppose if you're ever going to say it, 2004 would be the time where he was not the face, but the voice of modern football.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You'd hear him go like, thank you very much. And you'd be like, yeah, that's modern. That could only be late 90s, yeah. early noughties football.
That's true. Well, I mean, Adam, as we said, we've read a book by Andy already. We've read 1985's, 1986's Shades of Grey. Better title, I would say, first of all. Should we fill you in on what we learned so far, just in case? Yeah, I want you to know the full Andy Grey.
Yeah,
story.
I
want to
know how the franchise...
Of course.
I want to know how the Andy Grey book franchise kind of dovetails, because I'm slightly confused.
Yeah, because you're Andy Grey cinematic universe. Yeah, exactly. Basically, Shades of Grey took us up to, I think, Everton, Jack, from memory?
No, it was Villa. It was his second Villa return. But it was literally, he must have moved in the summer. I think it must have. Because he was like really looking forward to being back at Villa and working under Graham Turner. It will be great, I'm sure. I'm sure I won't fall out with Graham Taylor and, you know, hate
that's
him.
That's not
afterwards.
How a book should finish. That's like program notes. Like, yeah, I'm looking forward to the game today. But yeah.
So many of these books end with like, and that is, I assume it will now be 1995 forever. Obviously stops at this point.
Imagine the reader who read this book in 1985 with that the last line had to wait 19 years to find out whether it did work out well under Graham Turner. Yeah, poor guy. In terms of things that were covered, quite a lot of it, the first maybe five or six chapters of this book were pretty well covered.
You got Jim McLean at Dundee United. You got the thought I was going to move to Germany, but
yes.
I didn't, which is as
so he
a
just
story.
Told the story again in this book.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yep. And Adam, it's exactly as detailed. It's exactly the same thing where it's, I was going to go to Germany. They said, do you want to come to Germany? I said yes, and then I said no. Terrible story.
A story that didn't go into any more detail, but is also in the original one. Adam, I'm sure you enjoyed this. When Andy Gray went to live with Black Sabbath for the summer. Sadly, no more details.
This is kind of intertwined with his ownership of a nightclub, isn't it?
And,
Holy City Zoo.
Yeah,
he'd said 5 pages earlier, "Oh, I didn't do that celebrity stuff. I opened a couple of fates here and there," and then just casually says, "I owned a nightclub." You're like, "Yeah,
yeah, yeah."
Has a nightclub been so more likely to be described as ill-fated than Holy City Zoo?
I mean, it's probably disappointing people who want to go clubbing and people who want to go to a zoo. Probably on both ways. You're not going to get any good Google reviews from that.
I think we had less detail in this one, didn't we? It was quite sad.
Probably.
The 1985 book gave us more like who the celebrities were hanging out at that point. I think probably because in 2004, it's not particularly impressive to say, oh, we had, I now can't think of any of the celebrities who were hanging out in his
In the original
nightclub.
One.
Yeah.
Oh, was it? It Jim was like Davison.
Joe Pasquale. I don't know why.
There's not as much name dropping, I wouldn't have thought, in this one. It doesn't feel like he's, you know, putting himself out there as a
mover and
star
shaker,
knower,
as a cultural icon, I think.
Put it partly.
I think that's the case. But we also had, in terms of weird little things that did pop up, remember there was that story, Jack, in the first one where he wants to remind himself that, you know, he's a normal person, he goes and watches poor people going to work at 6 right. o'clock
oh,
in the morning
yes.
and sits at a bus stop. Yeah,
yeah,
weirdly.
That's so weird.
He used that twice. He used that in the first one. It was just as weird in the second.
He's just copied the book. This is insane.
That
is a great story. No, yeah, he used to drive to Birmingham bus station at 6 a.m. and sit and eat his sandwiches and watch people go to work and go, oh, I'm lucky to do what I do.
I'm glad I'm not them.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah.
The thing having now read this anecdote twice, the thing I can't get over is what would he have said if someone had been like, hey, is that Andy Gray sitting eating sandwiches watching us? And he'd have been like, yeah, sorry, I'm just sitting and watching you and just being really happy that I'm not you. Anyway, keep going about your daily business.
This story doesn't appear in the first book, but it's a little bit of helpful extra context about why he didn't move to Germany and join Schalke in 1974. Because 11 years later, when Everton beat Bayern in the Cup Winners' Cup semi-final, Bayern's Dieter Hernes encountered Andy Gray at the final whistle. Andy Gray says, I went to shake hands with Hernes at the final whistle. He didn't want to know. He just looked at me and screamed, "That was not football. You are crazy men," and stormed off. In my view, that was totally unjustified. That sounds like a really made up quote. Among many in this book,
there are so many made up quotes. But there's a made up headline at one point. I want to try and find it again.
I'm oh, sure is it the is it the Sun one? You're a great footballer, Andy Gray. Don't turn into a yob.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. When he, I think I can't. What he does? He get is this when
he does the V sign?
Yeah, the fans.
I do like how he broke the fine down per finger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Good maths.
Yeah, that was good maths. That was good maths. Yeah, you can't get anything past Andy. But basically, we read the whole first five chapters already, and now you've read it twice effectively.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Just what's surprising about that in a way is that it. I feel like in 1985, when he was writing this, you know, the wounds of Ron Saunders and the sense of like, oh God, my life is, you know, like he doesn't know where his career is going to go. The fact that in 2004, he still has these gripes against all these people. He still has this kind of bitterness. That was kind of surprising, I think.
That is true. And I think that moves us quite nicely onto our second topic, this bitterness. Because I think it's kind of summed up a little bit by something, again... Sorry, someone's on my door. It might be a
proper old school doorbell. Fair play.
Andy Gray at the other end. Like, well, you're being mean about me.
He's going to come in with his sandwiches and just sit and watch James record.
I was just thinking about how fortunate I am.
Should we talk about Bitter Andy then?
Bitter Andy.
This is good.
Again, this is before we even really get into the meat of the book. This is in the preface. The last line of the preface. Is when it's in the scene which you've already discussed, Adam, where his daughter comes in, says, "Well, you're a footballer," and he basically goes, "Was I a footballer?" for three pages, and then the last.
Very quickly, his daughter says, "He says, like, yeah, I was a footballer," and she goes, "What? Like David Beckham?"
That's
like,
it.
Like she only knows who David Beckham is.
The only footballer she knows. And then, later, so the last line because of that in the preface is, "Like David Beckham?" I'll let you decide. And this kind of throughout the book, Jack can't wait to jump in here. I can see already. Throughout the book, this kind of balance between modern football and old football, and whether he's kind of got to justify himself against these new superstar footballers, it pops up much more than I thought it would. I thought that was just a throwaway line in the preface, but it's pretty prominent, Jack, right?
No, he seems to be really like focused on it, because at the start he tries to sort of say like, my career is very similar to David Beckham's in many ways, because...
He explains it really well. He justifies it. It's almost like a dissertation, a point-by-point analysis of how his career is parallel to David Beckham.
I feel like he justifies it because, you know, David Beckham is fundamentally incredibly successful. That's one thing about David Beckham that you have to sort of, like, how many titles did he win? Five for United? He must have won around five or six.
Maybe,
Like, he won the Champions League, he captained his country. Like, Gray's similarities are like, oh, well, I also fell out with a manager.
Yeah, they are some of the more tame things. Yeah, I know what you mean. There's no... You know, I mean, the big things about Beckham, a lot of things, international superstar, married a Spice Girl, kicked, what's his chops, Diego Simeone. They're the four things I think that stand out.
Andy Gray got together with a gymnast, Olympic gymnast.
That's true. So that is true.
And maybe he kicked Diego Simeone. We don't know.
No, we don't know. They're going to be.
Andy Gray's equivalent of that, apparently, is punching a Czech defender's face in a World Cup qualifier, which I admit is a stretch to Diego Simeone.
Because he says, that's what he says. He says, I did it in a World Cup game, and it wasn't. It was a World Cup qualifier.
He never went to a World Cup with Scotland.
There are sort of repetitive sort of near misses for him in World Cup squads, which starts to get a bit weird towards the end.
And he's like, oh, you know, like David Beckham. Well, he says David Beckham went abroad, and I, like David Beckham, nearly went abroad. Not the same thing.
both chilling for Qatar now, you know.
Oh, that's true. That's very true. They're very similar at this point. There's a bit.
Hey,
also
save it for in Doha Grey. Save it for the third book. Then that's still less... like David Beckham. Keep deciding.
Less Enola Gray, more in Doha Grey. That's Adam.
Thank
Harry.
God you've
Thank
explained
you very
it.
Much for...
Thank God.
There's another bit where he's like, you know, in order to be a great footballer, you've got David Beckham. He's always first in training and he's last out as well. You have to do that. And I did that. Like, he really wants to say that he's the similar guy.
And which is kind of what harks back, sorry, Adam, it kind of harks back to the difficulty I have with the book. Like, who is it aimed at, effectively? Because it doesn't quite, it does go into detail about his old life, but he clearly thinks that a lot of young viewers who only know him from Sky Sports are going to buy this book, and their only real frame of reference is David Beckham, which I don't think is the, I don't think there was ever a point in 2004 where I was tempted to buy Andy Gray's book, and I probably was the market he's talking to.
I get the impulse of a player, an ex-player of his age, wanting to kind of impress on people that he was good when he was younger. I get this anxiety. I sense this anxiety from a lot of players of that era, you know, pre kind of televised football wall to wall.
Yeah,
where they think, I really need to let you know that, you know, I was really good as well. And you hear it all the time. I'm really not surprised he's joined in, because he's a very acute case of this. You know, he won Footballer of the Year and Young Player of the Year at the same time. Yep. This is fairly it was unprecedented. It's never happened again. So,
is that true? I get the eagerness.
It can't happen again because as he points out, they changed the rules to make sure that they could.
I don't think they have. I think maybe they did and it's gone back, because I think you can be up for.
I'm pretty sure you can be. Yeah, definitely. I think he's lying.
Yeah, I think he's made that up totally as well.
One strand of his, as Jack mentioned, kind of one strand of his kind of proper football manness is this kind of dedication to training, and how some modern players maybe kind of cruise through training. But this is a really great story, and it ends in such an Andy Gray kind of way. When I was coaching at Villa myself, I remember a kid there who was very quick but awkward in the way he collected the ball. I got him to stay behind a few times to help iron out his problems, but I could tell he wasn't really bothered. He was only there because I told him to be. One day I said, "I tell you what, son, if you don't feel like doing extra work, you don't have to." He never stayed behind again. His name was Brian Small. Ever heard of him? No, thought not. Brutal.
The way he chucks him under the bus.
There's another bit in this where he's like, I think players should celebrate. When Darius Vassell doesn't smile after a goal, I get so angry with him. Why are you having a go at Darius Vassell?
Was Darius Vassell famed for being frowny? I don't remember this at all. I don't remember anything. I don't remember Darius Vassell being a particularly surly chap. That came out of nowhere and did that. It's really weird, this, because the book, it never really flows, because he's telling a story. And then he'll just interrupt it by slagging off Mark Bosnich or talking about why Wayne Rooney has disciplinary problems.
And he's got a real problem with Martin Keown as well.
Oh, yeah.
Martin Keown pops up every now and then. He just calls him a prick and then moves on really quickly.
He says he's the only footballer he never really got on with while playing. But then as you get through the book, there's a lot more footballers he didn't get on with while playing. You find out soon.
There's one moment where his kind of self-confidence and a kind of preclusion for stories that definitely didn't happen really collide. This is this passage. "And I smacked it, only with my weaker right foot. It went in like a rocket. I think the first time Tottenham's keeper Ray Clements saw the ball after it left my boot was when it bounced back out of the goal. I ran up to him," this did not happen, "and I said, 'Don't worry about it, Clem. There's a perfectly good net behind you to stop that one.'" The only place that quote happens is in a Roy of the Rovers cartoon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nowhere else. No one has ever said that to a goalkeeper, ever.
Also, because you're playing football, you'd be really tired.
Yeah. You're never that quick
witted. You'd be out of breath. You'd be like, "Hey, you see the ball? Didn't did you? Because the net happened anyway. Fine." There are so many bits in this book. And also, it's that frustrating thing where he'll tell these ridiculous over-the-top stories and then also call out other people for doing the same. There's a bit where he gets like really uppity with, he's talking about Doug Ellis and saying that Doug Ellis likes to tell one anecdote where Doug Ellis invents the bicycle kick.
Which I've heard before.
Yeah.
Have you heard that before?
Maybe I think Crouchy's autobiography talks about this as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just odd because, like, that kind of, like, self, you know, that's self-aggrandizing that he can see in other people. He can't necessarily see in himself.
Yeah, he's told us twice that he likes to sits around and watch poor people at a bus station. So yeah. It's not like it's he's famed for not repeating
not
the same
poor people,
story
just
again.
Other people.
That's
other
true.
People.
Sorry, yeah. Specifically working people are the people he does it with.
There are lots of good anecdotes in this book, but they're often let down by the fact that Andy Gray won't let himself be the punchline, if that makes sense.
He wants to show he's smarter than people.
Yeah.
That's a very good point, actually.
Yeah.
There's a bit where he's talking about how the crowd was being abusive to Andy Gray, and so they scored, and then Andy Gray like said some swear words back to these fans, and then apparently a policeman came to the to the dressing room and said like, "Oh, apparently Andy Gray said some swear words, so I have to arrest him." And then his manager says like, "Oh, well, if you're gonna arrest him, you gotta arrest all the people swearing back at him." Yeah. Hey!
And everyone applauded.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone stood up you know.
Yeah,
you're right. He's very rarely the butt of the joke, or even sort of it's kind of a frequent pattern of kind of condescending people. He went to the World Cup in 2002 and he said the Koreans were great, really hospitable and friendly, but I think it's fair to say they are not the world's biggest drinkers. Two cans of lager and they are steaming.
They. Yeah. The Koreans.
Yeah, every there is one bit though where he does make himself the butt of the joke, which I was surprised by. Page 145, he Norman Hunter tries to snap him in half. And he was like, I was ready to mix it, but not with Norman. Norman was scary. I looked up at him and squeaked, I didn't do it on purpose, honest. It was an accident. I'm really not that good. And I thought,
I do like that bit, actually.
And I was like, yeah, he can laugh at himself. But other times he just wants to show he's smarter than everyone. Like Ron Atkinson, there's a bizarre bit where he just chooses some nothing match and says, Ron Atkinson should have played Steve Froggatt. That's all it boils down to.
And I told him to do
finally
that.
Getting that off his chest.
Yeah.
And he played some other guy. The other guy wasn't that good. Steve Froggatt came on, was really good. And I was like, see, Ron? And there's another bit actually also where like he gets dropped by Howard Kendall. And then later on, he gets picked up again and he plays well. And then he says, and Howard Kendall came over to me and said, I'm sorry, I was wrong to drop you, Andy. Please forgive me.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, there's lots of stories about him maybe being dropped and then not because, he's just too important. But interesting, the Norman Hunter story is very interesting because what I expected from this book, one of the things I did expect from this book and that it didn't transpire, probably in a good way, was I thought Andy Gray would really big himself up as kind of a footballing hard man, like a real tough guy. And he's not. There's a lot of stuff about injuries and there's a lot of stuff about putting his head in where the boots are flying.
Mm-hmm.
But at no point does he really suggest he's some sort of, real tough guy. It's just, it was more kind of naively brave centre forward who just really wanted to score goals, which I think is quite a nice touch because he really doesn't big up his ability to punch anybody's lights out.
But that is true. And he was a big guy. He could do if he wanted to. That's true.
And
yeah.
he talks about how he feels like he's been unfairly tarred with this idea because he doesn't get sent off that often. Yeah. Or he doesn't get, that many bookings and stuff. So I think, you're right. That's fair enough in that sense.
Jack's coming round. Jack's
no,
going
I'm not.
Round.
I hate him.
Okay.
There's a little bit where he talks about his will to win and his competitiveness. And it contains I feel like this is mandatory for all footballers' autobiographies, especially of that era. He says, whatever I do, I want to be the best at it, whether it's football, golf, snooker, or TV presenting. I'm not sure where that competitive streak comes from, but it's a fact. I can't even play tiddlywinks without wanting to win. Tiddlywinks now only exists in hypothesis.
Yes, I agree. I was going to say this. It's the only cliche. It's the proper cliche. I found it. Always tiddlywinks.
Always.
No one has ever played tiddlywinks.
Only use an example.
We really need to update tiddlywinks.
I agree. What would the modern equivalent be?
Oh. Scrabble? Even then, that's pretty dated.
I think Scrabble. I think people can get very competitive with Scrabble.
Conkers? Conkers?
I feel it needs to be something that's like
Hungry
fidget
hippos.
Spinners.
Hungry hippos. Fidget spinners.
I can't even play Hungry Hippos without wanting to win.
Andy Gray and Richard Keys at halftime playing Hungry Hippos. Punching each other's lights
out.
I'm sure that would be some BN Sport or content online of some sort. Cool. Well, we're going to go on a break. And when we're back, seems a good point.
Well, we're done.
And we will be back after the break with the many faces of Andy Gray, and we head into the Sky Sports studio.
Hello, I'm Adam Hurry, host of Football Clichés, a truly unique podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Twice a week, my guests and I tear apart the language of football. The words, the phrases, the mannerisms, and the weird habits of everyone involved in the game. From the shoes that football pundits are legally required to wear, to the didn't play for Sam Allardyce's Bolton but really should have done 11, Football Clichés explores all the tiny things that you didn't realise you cared about, but believe me, you do.
Hi, we're Football Book Club Podcast. And we need your support now. Let's drop the appeal music. Hi, everyone. James here. And I just want to tell you about the brand new Football Book Club Club, which you can join to receive bonus weekly episodes, access to exclusive member events, and your very own Football Book Club bookmark. All for the same price as a used copy of Darren Huckabee's 2007 book, Hucks. So if you enjoy the podcast and need to hear more afterwards, head to patreon.com/footballbookclub. Enjoy the episode. Hello and welcome back to Football Book Club, where we're reading Andy Gray's Grey Matters with self-confessed Andy Gray stan, Adam Hurry. Hey, still his biggest fan, Adam?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, okay. Still very much an advocate of Andy Gray, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Jack hasn't worn you down yet, I can see.
No.
I'm still watching this.
I hate this
over.
New role of yours as this sort of like...
The umpire
in this terrible...
I'm amazed by the respect I'm being afforded here. This is fantastic.
Well, usually when there's like four people, it's hard to control everyone. Whereas with the two, I can kind of sit back and just enjoy myself. Just two footballing heavyweights battle it out over Andy Gray.
God.
It's great. Cool. So, Adam, I asked everyone to come with an out-of-context Andy Gray. So would anyone like to kick off with their out-of-context Grayism?
I'm happy to go.
Please, Adam, as the guest.
I mean, so much to work with, but I really like this one. Whether I'd have become another Bill Gates, we'll never know.
Yes.
Again, though, the idea is that, you know, potentially Andy Gray could become the next Bill Gates.
That is such an it's such a shame that this has fallen out of context section, because now we can't explain why, but that is a very interesting...
Yeah, I'd love to explain why, but no, I'm going to leave it just hanging. Great.
Yeah, that's good. My one is, I've gone blue. I was a fresh-faced 19-year-old and I thought I'd be able to manipulate me. That's all I've got in my one.
Is that Ron Saunders?
That could be. I can't remember. I think it might be Ron Saunders or someone at maybe Dundee at the time. I can't remember.
That's fair.
Oh, it all fades into it. His career is very hard to follow at some points. Jack, out of context, Andy Gray.
They set off with about a dozen hamburgers each, and they were ramming them into their mouths as fast as they could.
That's one of his better anecdotes in the book, actually. Almost my dramatic reading this week, but it's too short, sadly.
It's quite short. That's fair.
And that was out of context Andy Gray. There we go.
If Andy Gray had been in an eating, you know, hamburger eating competition, he'd have had to have won. That's the thing.
It
was
everyone
else was even, just amazed at how many hamburgers I were able to shove into my mouth. It was incredible.
Even if I'm in a hamburger eating contest with my Villa teammates, I have to win. So it is. That's just how Andy is. Full disclosure, we were meant to have Tash on the show, but sadly Tash isn't feeling very well today. However, I know she was extremely keen to look at the pictures in Andy Gray's book. So, Adam, this is a section we do which works to varying varying success, where we just describe some of the pictures in the books. Did you enjoy the picture section? There's two of them in there.
Is there? Not in my one.
I have none. I have no pictures.
You have no
pictures? There's no pictures in mine.
What? I've got two sets. Adam's got one. And
that's the section I usually race to be honest.
Yes.
That one, and I should add a bonus sticker that came with the book that I've been able to peel off.
What does it say?
It's a Disney character of some sort.
Oh, it's Toy Story. It's the alien from Toy Story.
Yeah, I couldn't peel it off.
You have saved our lives.
I don't want to deface the book by peeling it. So
my one hasn't got anything on it. It's made. It says very neat handwriting. T.M. Bach, August 2012.
This is the copyright of Bach.
But the pictures, let's guess.
What a composer he was, by the way.
Thank you very much. Great sonata.
Some of the pictures in here, I think Tash would have loved them. I mean, as you mentioned, very Bruno Brooks style. I'm going to post a picture of Bruno Brooks with this.
It's
uncanny.
That's true. He looks a bit like he's in Teen Wolf in that picture.
That's windswept kind of mullet he's got. Yeah, he's a striking young man. Young man in there. There was a lot of pictures. So I was going to say, there's a lot of pictures of him like playing football in a kilt and things like that. I don't know if you've got these in your one, Adam. Jack, obviously you don't, but I'll treat you with some of them. We had Pat Nevin come on the show the other week, and Pat said, oh, here's another one of him, lying in a bath, shirtless.
Nothing more 70s/80s than the football in a bath.
Yeah. Very much so. But
is
Pat
he
Nevin,
on the phone?
Dangerous. Not in the bath, on the sofa. That's with his leg in cast, actually. But so Pat Nevin said in his book, he was like, I'm not all about the fame. Like, I might pop up on these music shows and stuff, but I don't care for that kind of side of things. There's a story in one of his books where he's going to do a photo shoot, and he's like, okay, I'll do it as long as it's, you know, tactful, and I'm not going to make a fool of myself. And the guy turns up with, like, a Scottish wig and a kilt and all these kind of things.
Bagpipes.
And Pat's like, nah, that's all right, that's not really my kind of thing. Yeah. Andy Gray, very much that is his kind of thing.
I love that they've been like, Pat's turned us down, who can we go for? Get Gray on the phone. He'll put a kilt on.
He loves it. Every single one. He does not care about the stereotypes. He embraces it fully. And there's a picture of him in the Holy City Zoo as well. There we go.
That's wow, yeah.
There's also a lot of pictures and a time which we didn't really get to know from the first book, Shades of Grey, when he returns to Aston Villa, when Graham Taylor gets rid of him because, in Andy's words, the players like and respect him too much.
Oh, yeah.
Which that could is that? Do you think that's one of the questionable lines, Adam? Whether that actually happened or not?
It's supposedly quite a common managerial ploy, isn't it?
True.
To get out the guy who knits the dressing room together, so you can start exerting your own influence. But
I'm
sure a lot of footballers think they were that guy. That's the thing.
Yeah, he never explicitly said that.
He doesn't like Graham Taylor at all. Doesn't like him at all.
It doesn't. It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think he actually did play under him. Right, he played under Graham Turner. Then I think he was. I think because
he was shipped out beforehand. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very confusing structure because there's two GTs in charge of Villa. Yeah. So he comes in and the beginning of the Aston Villa bit, he slags off Graham Taylor for getting rid of him, and then he plays under Graham Turner, but only calls him Graham all the way through.
Yeah.
And then it comes full circle back to when it's a confusing book. Anyway,
it's a very confusing book.
And then we've got pictures of him Rangers as well when he went there to play, and when Graham Souness apparently just signed him for banter. Just like no other reason.
This is where he finally intersects with Ally McCoist, and it's so weird to think of them coexisting in the same place. It's
yes.
It's like Batman and Spider-Man. They just sort of shouldn't be together. You think of them as completely separate universes. And I couldn't handle that force of personality in the same room. But he's slightly jealous of Ally McCoist.
Yeah.
He calls him lucky. Throughout his career, so Lady Luck wasn't just smiling on him, it was et cetera, et cetera. And I feel like he's just jealous of everything that Ally McCoist has always done.
He's
Prime jobs he's getting nowadays. Mm. Yeah.
He's like, oh, it's, you know, it's better to be, you know, Lucky's being good. You know, he quotes Napoleon and says, like, oh, it's better to have lucky generals rather than
the best
good
thing
ones.
is that Napoleon ends up in the index. I'm always massively confused by why footballers' autobiographies need indexes. It's just like, well, maybe it's for people like me who just think, oh, I just want to read that bit. But Napoleon does not need to be in the index on that basis alone.
In fairness, at some point, I'm going to look up and be like, there was a footballer who mentioned Napoleon. Who was it? And then I'll go through all these indexes.
Yeah, it is always fascinating looking at that. I mean, I'm just looking through it. I can see Mexico is one thing. Middle East. It says Savo Milosevic.
He
really
does.
It is. Yeah,
the stuff with Ally McCoist is really
two different cats. He's titled Pom, Andy's cat, and then brackets Aussie, Andy's cat.
Lulu, his horse as well.
Lulu the horse. Sorry, Jack, you're about to say
that's an odd line. Oh, just the Ally McCoist stuff is really interesting because Ally McCoist does come across as very likable in a way that you're right. It feels like Andy desperately wants to be liked in that way, but I think that Ally McCoist is quite self-effacing.
Yeah.
Even though he's that bit where he's like, there's a bit where he's dropped, and so Ally McCoist is like, oh, where's Jeremy Beadle? Hey, who, you know, drop Ally
really
McCoist? That's like, that's a way of being like funny, like self-effacing about himself while also knowing that he's good. It's an interesting line that he's able to walk.
Gray just doesn't have the boyish charm, does he?
No. Yeah.
There's the alpha male aspect, but he really doesn't have the kind of cheeky chappy
that's true
thing that McCoist has. They were both involved in that film that McCoist was in, A Shot at Glory. I didn't realise Andy Gray was involved.
What was that film? Sorry,
you are
I need to know
through
about
my
that
quiz.
Film.
You are, Adam, with your...
Oh, sorry.
No, perfect.
From a podcaster's perspective, that must be really annoying.
I make loads of backup questions because they always get blown. But this is particularly fascinating. So this is the film with Robert Duvall and Michael Keaton, right?
Yes,
Shot at Glory? Shot at Glory, is that what it's called?
Yeah, A Shot at Glory. It's about a lowly Scottish, fictional Scottish club called Kilnockey, who are taken over by an American millionaire, played by Michael Keaton, who hires a, I would say textbook old Scottish manager, except the fact he's played by Robert Duvall, whose Scottish accent is so bad.
Have you seen this film? Have you seen it?
I think I have. I watched it for purposes of a piece, but I've got a sort of... skim through it. I got a very, very dodgy version of it online. And for some baffling reason, amongst all the baffling things in this film, McCoist plays a former Celtic striker.
Yes.
So they get footage of McCoist playing for Rangers and sort of badly superimpose a green and white shirt over the
top.
Really strange. Why would they need to change it?
I can only assume that if they thought, if they get McCoist, who's so obviously Rangers, but sort of soften it by saying he used to play for Celtic in the film, then they won't get anybody boycotting it. No, but Andy Gray's role, which I'd never heard about before, he was there as a kind of football consultant. So they used to send him scenes, and anything that he thought was a bit weird, they would then go back and sort of overdub it. So it was mainly Robert De Waal's kind of speeches in the dressing room.
That's really interesting. And that was his role. And was he in the film as well?
Only as a commentator. I think he did sort of co-commentary voiceover, but he doesn't appear in the film.
Interesting.
The idea of him and McCoy just being in the same frame is just mind-blowing. It's just, it shouldn't be in the same space.
I remember actually on Football Cliches, you've talked about this before, how you feel like they should have football researchers in for films. Like, I think you mentioned, what was that film with Chris Pratt?
My Dream Job.
You talked, yeah, well, there was a film with Chris Pratt, wasn't there, recently, where there's the World Cup final going on. It's
the Tomorrow War.
Yeah, that's it. Tomorrow War. And it starts off with the World Cup final, maybe between Scotland and Brazil.
What the hell?
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
And I remember, I think Andy Gray invented this role.
Is that the weirdest like sci-fi bit in that movie? Or like, is that the sort of the craziest sci-fi moment?
Yeah, well, Andy Gray perfected that role.
I want to know what advice Andy Gray gave. Was it like, oh yeah, well, if you want a really good reference point from, you know, you got the three big players, I'd say David Beckham, Eric Cantona, and Andy Gray.
Yeah.
So make sure you have lots of references to Andy Gray.
Also, he got the one thing he probably should have said is that, oh, by the way, Ali McCoy's played for Rangers. That's probably the thing.
Yeah,
he didn't do that.
Yeah,
so,
no, exactly.
Cocked that up.
But the film was made sort of 1999-2000, so he was very much at the peak of his kind of Sky powers. So he was an influential voice. So the idea of him coming in as a consultant for this kind of football verisimilitude sounds just about right to me, I think.
Yeah. It's true. I can't argue with it. And I was surprised that film came out as late as that. Mm. For some reason, I was thinking,
I'll be honest, I'm surprised that film exists at all.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway, that was kind of the picture section. I'll send you all pictures of the pictures. Don't worry. I feel like we should move on to a subject which I know you're very keen on, Adam, something which we haven't really talked about on the podcast that much before, and that is punditry. Adam, we haven't really done many people who have gone on to become big pundits, I guess. We've had people
Kamara.
Oh, Chris Kamara. Yeah, of course. We did Cammy's book, but, you know, Cammy's book is just a... it's exactly what you think Cammy's book is going to be, and there's very little insight into the actual Sky world. But Andy Gray's one, he does go into a lot of depth about it, and I know you appreciated that, Adam.
Absolutely right. I mean, of all his kind of nuggets of self-confidence, his bits about punditry are probably the most deserved and the most proportionate, because he was part of a transformative phase of British footballing TV. I didn't know this bit, but he was the first co-commentator as we understand them. Back before that, in 60s, 70s and 80s, it was someone like Bobby Charlton who would come in every 10 minutes and give their view on the game and then bugger off again, and then you wouldn't hear from them, and it was just one commentator.
Kind of like when Redknapp sat in the stand or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So now they have that again. Yeah, that's a very good point. We kind of come full circle.
Yeah.
Andy Gray, he claims, was the first kind of proper 50-50 or maybe sort of 60-40 arrangement where he would really kind of analyse things as they happen rather than just come in every now and then. And he's quite proud of that. But his stint at Sky, where sort of Sky made him fill around with the video machines and stuff like that and the equipment, he rightly claims was a kind of innovative phase in footballing coverage. So, yeah, he doesn't get too serious about it, really. But you detect that he thinks he's very much at the cornerstone of all of this.
Yeah, it's very much like, I reference this quite a lot on the podcast, and I realise less people have seen it than the original. Anchorman 2. There's a whole bit where they're kind of inventing, you know, rolling news and car chases being a thing, and that the kind of parodying the Fox thing. It's a little bit like that, because they kind of take, I mean, obviously, a lot, as Andy says himself, they've taken a lot of it from American football. I'm guessing you guys aren't big fans of Anchorman 2, perhaps. Maybe I'm alone.
No, sadly not. But the American football thing is very interesting, because this leads me on to my final story that definitely didn't happen. And I'm happy to be corrected on this. He says, I can look back from the position we're in now to those early days when things were a lot less slick and we had to improvise a bit more. I can recall times like the one when I was leaving the studio to go home, walking across the car park and hearing the producer yelling after me, Andy, come back. Nicky Horn's sick. We need you to present the American football. And I turned round and went back in and did 4 hours of coverage of the Dallas Cowboys versus the Philadelphia Eagles.
Amazing.
I mean, no nonsense. Way did that happen.
If that footage exists, I want to watch it. I'd rather watch that than read
There's
this.
There's nothing on Google about this.
Is there not? Interesting. Maybe we weren't watching American football at the time in England, so no one checked. No one thought it was weird. I mean,
surely he's got to tell us what he talked about. And he said, "Throw the ball to me," and I caught it, and I went all the way and I said, "Thank you very much," and that's a touchdown. That's it. What else?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's for 4 hours. 4 hours of that.
4 hours.
Yeah. Of the sport that maybe he knows something about. Maybe. Mm.
Yeah.
I think he'd have to have been like, "Can you please explain the rules to me again? Is that good? Has what that player done just then good?" Have you seen this footage of when they had Gary Lineker present the golf?
Yeah, he used to do the Open.
That was weird. Yeah. That sort of reminds me of that, except that with the added thing of he's ill, so you have to run back in, which doesn't make any sense.
It's true. It's a bit like the Olympics, though, when they just get all the sports presenters to focus on sports that they're not really attached to. So Lineker will sometimes do the Olympics, right? Or
like Alex Scott will be like, javelin throwing. You're like, okay,
yeah,
cool,
exactly.
Great.
Yeah, Claire Balding, equestrian stuff, I think she does know about, but then,
but she'll be everything else.
Talking about, handball or something like that. Yeah, it's a bit, maybe it's a bit like that. Maybe if you play one sport, you know them all. Maybe.
Tiddlywinks.
This was some sort of act of self-sacrifice and heroism. Is this,
yeah.
You know what? I'll help you out.
Yeah.
And also the idea that that's like one step away from them being like, "Andy, one of the players is injured. You've got to come and play for the Philadelphia Eagles." Okay, then.
I am talking of things that maybe didn't happen. I've got a very short dramatic reading for you this week. So, Adam, could you do the honour and just say cue dramatic music, please?
Cue dramatic music.
Oh, that was good. Oh, Andy himself would be proud of that. That was great.
Thank you very much.
Football is a game of strong emotions. The fans are caught up in it. Wait, that can't be right. There's no comma in that. That's a bizarre start. Football is a game of strong emotions. The fans are caught up in it.
It.
And comment... Bizarre. And guys, that is generally the first line. I read it again. That is what the line is. Page 247. Football is a game of strong emotions. The fans are caught up in it. And commenting...
It's sort of like a moment of poetry, like sort of beat poetry.
It is, yeah. It
really like it.
Yeah, and commentating on the number of games I do, I am more or less bound to offend somebody. The funny thing is that most times when fans have actually approached me to have a go over something I've said, it's turned out to be something I didn't say at all. Classic Andy. Of course he's not. Of course he's not culpable. I can't count the times people have come up and said, "I totally disagree with what you said about so-and-so." And it's turned out to be a game they watched on ITV or BBC.
Oh,
3 years
God.
Ago. Yeah. And this is starting off a chapter. He clearly thinks this is one of his strongest anecdotes in the book. 3 years ago...
this is starting off the final chapter, can I say? this is the triumphant end to the whole book.
That's true. The hero's journey comes to an end. 3 years ago, a Birmingham City fan showed up to me and said, "You're typical Villa, you hate the Blues, you never have a good word to say about City, you don't." I said, "Hang on a minute, what division do Birmingham City play in?" And then he said, "The first." I said, "I work for Sky, do Sky cover Division 1 matches?" He looked at me for a few seconds and then said, "They don't, do they? Hey, I'm really sorry, Andy, I must be thinking of someone else," and off he went.
Horrible, horrible anecdote.
There we go. All solved.
Turns out I corrected someone. They were angry at me, and I was in the right, as usual.
That's almost very silly. That's as smarmy as Adam Walker's review from the very beginning of the show.
The other side of that story is that in Alan Brazil's autobiography, he gets accused of sexting somebody else's wife, and turns out it's actually Andy Gray. So,
yes. But the pundry stuff is pretty good. It is quite interesting, a lot of it.
This is the bit of the book that annoyed me the most. As someone who thinks of himself as something of an expert in this very, very specific field.
Yes.
He mentions Kevin Keegan's rant, his famous rant on Sky.
Yes.
And he also mentions the thinking man's version of Kevin Keegan's rant, which is Ron Atkinson's Sky Sports rant on Monday Night Football. Mm. And he goes through that rant verbatim. But he gets it wrong. He just gets it wrong. Like the lyrics of a song. He just gets it wrong. I just think, you were there.
Yeah.
And it's available to watch back. How can you get it? How can you quote it wrong? This is a rant I know word for word. And he's just got it. He's got it all wrong.
Oh,
it
dear.
Really annoys me.
Which one did he get wrong? Is it both?
No, just the Ron Atkinson one.
Okay.
That's still
sacrilegious.
Yeah, so it's like the line says, "You can sit there and play with all your silly machines as much as you like." And he said, "He can sit up there playing with his silly machines and talk all he likes." Why would you get that? that wrong. Yeah. Why would you do it?
Yeah, that
is just terrible behaviour. And then it just goes on getting it wrong from then.
Yeah, bad.
Very also
bad.
Because if you're trying to turn these things into like folklore, which I sort of have a little bit of, like the Kevin Keegan thing feels a little bit like the greatest moment of Kevin Keegan's career. It'll be on his tombstone. I don't think that's how Kevin Keegan wants to be remembered.
And the last thing he wants to be remembered.
And I also don't think that's how he deserves to be remembered. But in some ways, that is how he's going to be remembered. Yeah. And that's thanks to Sky Sports.
Thanks to Andy and Richard.
Thanks to Andy and Richard. And like, and for better or for worse, that's true. But there seems to be something quite triumphant about it. But you're right, Adam. It's odd that you then, if you are trying to like mythologize these great moments of managers losing their mind, why wouldn't you get it right? Why wouldn't you make sure that everything you're saying is correct?
Because he obviously hasn't even done it off the top of his head, because there's no way he'd remember it that vividly.
Yeah.
So he's gone to find it and then still got it wrong, which is just, it's just absurd to me.
I think you've stumbled upon something, Adam, which we found quite a lot. Do we think he wrote it? Do we think he wrote any of it, really?
I would guess not, because it's just for the practicalities and the logistics of it. But I certainly don't think the prose is beyond him. That's all I'm saying.
No, I think they have captured Andy Gray's essence.
It's an authentic voice.
I think in a way, if it had been written by someone else, you'd have been able to get his voice better, because I think Andy Gray is very imitable. And actually, he comes across as, you know, on Sky Sports, you know, back in the old days, he came across as, you know, as a very passionate, as Adam says, a very passionate, excited guy. But that actually doesn't come across in this book. So in a weird way, I think that inability to translate is either a bad editor or it is authentically Andy.
Yeah, the book isn't as emphatic. It doesn't read as emphatically as he sounded.
The book should, if you suggesting, Jack, that the book should have been written all in caps lock. The whole
exactly
thing.
Yeah, like, yeah. And to be honest, there should have been big pauses where you'd expect Martin Tyler to jump in. There should have been like entire, it should be like a fill your own like a sort of interactive book. You get to write what Martin Tyler says, and then
that's a nice idea. That's
quite well, a whether idea, there was someone it? Else involved or not, there's no acknowledgements, like there's no thanks to anyone. I mean, I know there's a lot of wives, so I don't know, there's not much space.
Oh, the lack of wives, or the lack of like family talk. And there's such a sad bit where he talks about how he gets offered the Everton job in 1997, which fundamentally is bizarre. That's like that genuinely is like in a film where suddenly the author, or like the narrator who hasn't been in it, suddenly gets like told, you got to be part of the action. It seems so weird to me.
It'd be like Carragher getting offered the Liverpool job now.
It'd be like Gary Neville getting offered the Valencia job, which did happen.
Yeah.
It's so weird, because I think of him as so far, like it's such a meta moment. But there's a really sad bit where he talks about how he's so, you know, he was going to go for the job. And then like the next day, all of his Sky Sports colleagues are like, why would you take that job? A, because, you know, you have it easy here. But then he's also like, and then I remembered I have a daughter. And if I took the Everton job, I wouldn't be able to see her. And part of me is like, what? Is that not... How did it take you 48 hours to remember
Woke up one morning. Shit, like, daughter.
Of course, he needs to remember that she didn't know he was involved in football. That's so he didn't want to know.
That would have really surprised her. You're a football manager now? What experience have you got?
A football manager like Diego Simeone? Diego Simeone. I'll let you decide.
Adam, just finally, you must have really enjoyed... Richard Keys gets a lot of this book. The end of the book, it's all about Keys. He loves the man. He thinks he's a walking, talking genius.
Fascinating how inseparable they are, even after all these years and everything that's happened. They still get on. But I maintain, as I said at the start, this book mostly paints him in a decent light.
Yeah.
There are only a very few glimmers of the unpleasantness towards the end. And this is perhaps one of them. He's talking about all the little gimmicks that Sky Sports came up with to kind of promote Premier League football. He says one of them was the Sky Strikers cheerleaders. The girls put on a fantastic display and added a touch of glitter and glamour to the whole occasion. They were greatly appreciated, not least by some of the staff. On the days when the girls were working, Richard and I got to the ground at about 10 a.m, which, coincidentally, was just when they started to rehearse. That's the biggest glimpse you get of what may be about to unfold years later.
Yeah. Ugh.
I think that's the problem.
I forgot that this guy had cheerleaders.
I remembered that when they, because they show like old footage of old matches and stuff on like games occasionally, and it is very weird. Like, yeah, seeing these like cheerleaders and like fireworks going off. It's so OTT. It's very weird.
But there was actually one thing that was interesting, because there are a few things he says that are quite relevant. Almost, there's a bit where he talks about Super League effectively with Rangers and Celtic joining, which I remember was a discussion at the time. But then he talks about halftime shows as well, like how they used to have, who was it he was talking about?
Sumo
the Shaman?
Wrestlers?
The Shaman or someone like that?
The Shaman,
Yeah, and sumo wrestlers and things. And Shaman were Spurs fans, apparently, and it was the Arsenal stadium and they all kicked off. But that's a big thing that's come up again recently, right? They were saying that they might extend halftime for 25 minutes to bring out, you know, like, I don't know, Tiny Temple, like they did at the FA Cup final or whatever. That kind of thing. And it's
weirdly, that would probably work better now than it did in the early 90s, because in the early 90s there's still that, like, yeah, like the sense of visceral anger towards anything that isn't football on the whereas now I think people are a bit more like, oh yeah, I'll watch Tiny Temple for a bit.
I don't know if
people would be more accommodating for gimmicks than they would have been in the early 90s when the Premier League was being launched, and they thought, well, okay, if this is the deal, we'll go with it. But a bit more cynical now, I would say.
I was at Spurs last night. We had light shows before the game. They belt out that bloody song from Phantom Menace.
But they
never
really worked out what to do at halftime, have they? Because it is basically usually just someone kicking a ball into like a shed or something
We always get, like, I don't know, Gary Mabbott will come out and answer the same question he's asked for the last 30 years or whatever.
Just clapping.
How was it being a Spurs player?
You can never hear what they say. It booms around the stadium and you can't make up one word. Vaguely, if you hear the word Tottenham or whatever, you go,
Gary Mabbott, obviously a perfectly clear-cut legend at Spurs. So there's never going to be any doubt about that. It's when some clubs bring out an ex-pro who you look around and you think, they're not going to know who they are. Then he might not get an applause here. What's going to happen? And it's like people checking Wikipedia on their phones going, great guy.
Good to see
fantastic.
Him.
Fantastic. Great to see him. Good. Looks good. Good shape as well. Nice to see him. Good health.
Good knees. Good knees there. For a while when Arsenal is still terrible, but when I went to watch Arsenal for the past like 5 years, the only bit of joy I get is watching the kids try and score a goal against Gunnosaurus at halftime. That is the one bit of the game that I was like, I'm really invested in this. I have to see the children.
Do they still do that?
It's so sweet. It's really
it's timeless.
Sweet.
Timeless.
I love it.
I suppose Gary Mabbott all the way. That's all it is.
Honestly. Oh, you also have, you know, like an old Arsenal player will come out. Like, Jeremy Alioune-Adair. Great. Cool. But like, I think I would probably watch it where it was reversed, where I just watched 45 minutes of kids scoring penalties against Gunnosaurus and then 5 minutes of Arsenal playing football.
Cool. But then it comes to the end, basically, with all the Sky stuff. And then there's a very ominous line, the last line. There's no doubt about it. I'm a very lucky guy.
Like Alan McQuist.
Yeah, that's true. Adam and Jack, did this book change you?
I mean, it changed me in the sense that I now have to accept that I'm someone who's read 2 Andy Gray books in one year. I have to, like,
that's half the amount of Michael Owen books you've read.
That's upsetting me even more.
Yeah.
I think there's, I don't know, it's hard, isn't it? Because I think no matter what, however you read these books, like, the unpleasantness overshadows everything, so I think it probably tinges everything after that point, so I find it quite hard to find anything. I found the punditry.
You can't separate the art and the artist.
Exactly.
True. I can, because it all happened before it kicked off, and so I'm kind of going, it's all bubbling under,
That's the thing, is you can see it bubbling under, as Adam says, so it's sort of hard to separate it.
Yeah.
The punditry stuff was interesting, the boot room stuff was interesting.
Yeah.
When he actually talks about how, you know, like, the idea that maybe he changed how football was talked about in the UK, that is interesting.
That was definitely the idea, and I think we're probably a little bit, the fact that we'd read effectively the first 5 chapters in that terribly formatted book that we read the last time, Shades of Grey, I think we were maybe clouded our judgment a little bit by it, because I think Jack Owens, you'd have thought this was a stone cold classic. I can tell.
No.
Adam, you were changed. I mean, your first ever football book.
I guess so. I mean, I want to know more about him fathering 5 children with 4 women, to be honest. I want to know more about the dynamics of that, and it just sounds really careless to me, more than anything.
It didn't change you.
It didn't move me. I don't feel more or less about him than I did before, so it's a solid 6 out of 10.
Okay, interesting. So is that frustrating in a way? You wanted to get more.
Yeah, I mean, as I said at the start, the first kind of third of the book is hard going because it's just very, very long, slow slog through his Dundee United days, which he was a precocious talent. Nearly went to Germany and went to a World Cup at the age of 18, but
nearly being the operative word.
Yeah, there's lots of nearly. There's lots of nearly. I don't know. I feel like to want to know more about what drives him off the field, but it's golf, actually, as it turns out. Yeah, so as probably not much to know. No, I'm really scraping the barrel for things I wanted from this book.
Okay, sure. But yeah, you got a lot of rich keys and you got some made up stuff in there as well. Great. Yeah. Jack, out of 10?
Four.
Four. Okay.
Oh, four. Because
you're much more world weary about than me about this.
I definitely am.
This is on the back of 48
other
books.
Novelty. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna go five. I'm gonna stick in the middle. I know that's boring of me, but that it's a five book for me. It's very much a five.
There's not that sense of as Adam says, there's not a sense of like narrative. I don't feel like I know much about him except that I find him quite unlikable in certain aspects.
There you go.
I would say, you know, there's a paragraph on his family. There are two pages on him being on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with Richard Keys. So that is impressive in that sense.
Well, actually,
that's a very, very good point.
You've worryingly jumped upon again two things that I'm going to ask you in a second. But there is a bit more on his family that we do get, and it's going to come up in the quiz. So for the quiz this week, again, I've got three names because we were meant to have Tash here, but you're all named after things that Andy Gray doesn't like. So Adam, you're Alan Green's unenthusiastic commentary.
Good.
And Jack, you're the aloof Martin Keown. So shout out your name, your new name. If you think
what's your name?
Oh, my name. I guess I'll go. Mine was the other one I wrote for Tash was Arsene Wenger. He's not a
what's
fan
mine
of
again?
Arsene
mine
Wenger
again?
Moaning. Yours is Alan Green's unenthusiastic commentary.
Got it.
Very long.
Great.
That's going to give you an advantage.
Question number one. Which pop star did Andy share punditry duties with at the 78 World Cup? Well, 1978 Argentina?
Alan Green's unenthusiastic commentary.
Yep.
Rod Stewart.
Nope. Not that one. Good guess. Good guess. But incorrect, I'm afraid. Which means you're frozen out in these new rules.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, I'm really.
I'll just wait for Adam to.
Who do you think it is?
Aloof Martin Keown. Elton John.
Is correct. It's Elton John.
Yes, because he knew a lot about Watford. Yes.
Yeah,
sorry,
just after
took
Watford. Yeah. That is correct. So 1 point to the aloof Martin Keown. Question number two. What does Andy Gray do on the Sabbath on the Isle of Lewis that gets him into trouble?
Aloof Martin Keown.
Yep.
He puts the radio on and listens to it. And if his granddad comes back in and feels the top of the radio, he knows it's been on, so he'll tut. But fortunately, his grandmother, who is much more strict about this, is too short to reach the top of the radio.
Yep,
that's right.
It's incorrect. No,
it's completely wrong.
You've given me way too much. That is absolutely what it is. And
fair play.
Jack's very good at these, Adam. He really
I'm a big loser.
I told you about my attention span.
I read these books, I hate them, and then they're in my head for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's a bit about his family. We learned a bit about that when he went to the Isle of Lewis.
That was good, actually.
I liked that stuff, yeah.
That's weirdly, I think, because that's his childhood. That's a slightly different thing from his, like...
Sure.
His
personal life.
Family. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, we needed more stories from the Holy City Zoo. That's what I'm saying. Question number three. How much did Andy Gray and Richard Keys win on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Alan Green's unenthusiastic commentary.
Yes.
£64,000.
Is correct, Alan
I watched
Green.
It on YouTube in its entirety before we recorded.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Any highlights pop up from there?
No.
Okay, cool. Good to hear. Question number four. What is Martin Tyler's secret ambition?
Aloof Martin Keown.
Yep.
To commentate on all, is it 12 Champions League
no,
matches at the
no,
same
it's
time?
Not.
You can get the
Alan Green's unenthusiastic commentary. Yep. All 14 Champions League games. Yeah.
Yes, I love that.
I thought 14. That how does that work? But that's what he said. That's what the man said.
14
is correct.
Don't know.
I guess. Maybe there was
can't
like,
be
group
there's
stages.
Never gonna be a, there's never going to be a situation where there are 14 matches.
No.
Nope.
Anyway, we're getting bogged down there. So...
That's two all, right?
Yes, but I was going to say, I never gave the score for the book. You got three. But no, five. You got five, by the way. Bit five was Alan was this. This is getting very confusing. And the score for Andy Gray's book was five. So on the leaderboard.
Oh my God! Why are you doing that now? We're in the middle of a battle. We forgot.
I know. We're on to the last question. So it's all to play for. On the leaderboard, he is just above Michael Owen's soccer skills and Wayne Rooney's.
Who cares?
Book.
I want to beat Adam at this game.
No.
Love on to the last question. It all rides on this. Who gave the thumbs up to the ref to blow the whistle to start the first ever?
Me.
That's only because mine's longer. That's not fair.
As the guest,
okay,
I'm bowing down to the esteemed Adam Hurry. I'll finish the question. Who gave the thumbs up to the ref to blow the whistle to start the first televised game on Sky?
Jeff Shreves.
Is correct.
Sorry, Jack.
It's fine.
Look, the Alan Green's unenthusiastic commentary has stolen it at the last.
There'll be lots of controversy on social media later on where they're like, if anything, the 14 to 12, he deserved a half point at least, which would have put him over. So, you know, it's fine. True. Don't worry.
I very rarely come on your side, Jack, but you have been hard done by today, by me.
That's fine.
So, yeah. But there we go. And as a reward, you get our Ken Zong for this week. So, Adam, this is going to take some explaining. But every week on the show, our friend Ken writes us a chant for a former footballer, long since retired, that we could probably won't be able to sing on the terrace anymore. But he writes us a chant anyway about it. So this series, what have we had yet? We had Bojan Krkic, the tune of Work It by Missy Elliott. We had Steve Agrizovic to the tune of Gina G's, Ooh-ah Just a Little Bit.
Nice.
This week, he's got an eclectic taste, the tune of... I'm so embarrassed I'm going to sing this, but I'm going to have to give it my all. This week's the tune of Enter Sandman by Metallica. Here we go. One, two, three. It's at night. Keeps it tight. Gets his man. You're off to never scoring land. It runs out of steam at the end.
That's great. That's really good.
It's that night.
It started with that night.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It's that night. Keeps it tight. There we go.
Yeah, okay. You're often never scoring land.
Adam's kind of humming along to that, like you were listening.
I'm more of an ooh-ah Steve Grivich kind of man, but
we'll pump that in another time.
Ooh, well, this is all going to be, they're all going to be released as like a compilation album.
That's what I call Ken Zong. Anyway, that's all for this week. If you need more, we're going to be chatting 20 minutes more, Andy Gray, over on our Patreon with that episode out on Monday. To listen, please do join the Football Book Club for all our bonus episodes. And to get your hands on a Football Book Club bookmark, head to patreon.com/footballbookclub. Adam, thank you so much for joining us. It really has been brilliant to have you on. I'm glad you've read a football book.
Oh yeah, I'm delighted. Yeah, thanks for forcing me to read a book from page 1 to page 270 odd.
Thank you for reading it.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, it's been great fun. You've got a book yourself, Adam. It's called Football Clichés.
It certainly is.
And where can people find it?
All the places. I hear it's back in stock actually, so that's nice. It's still in print and still happening.
Perfect.
But no, doesn't contain any ego-boosting stories about Andy Gray or otherwise.
Okay. Next edition, second edition, maybe add a chuck a couple in.
The time you were on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with Richard Keys?
And where they just rang up another millionaire to ask them to help them.
That was such a boring bit of that story.
We're done with the book.
We can't take any more of it. We'll talk about on the Patreon. That's a little hint, push towards that. And of course, listen to Football Clichés, the podcast. It's a brilliant podcast.
Please do.
Brought to you by The Athletic. In the meantime, make sure you get in touch with us on Twitter @FootyBookClub, Instagram @FootballBookClub, or on Facebook. Send us your thoughts, your author footballer puns, because we need good ones. Chant ideas, anything. Adam, thanks again. Any last words?
I'm just a very, very lucky guy.
Oh dear. Oh, we know what that means. Oh no.
I do actually have a day off today, so I'm going to go and eat some sandwiches and at the nearest bus station and just watch the Great Unwashed.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Have their lunch, I don't know.
Yeah, enjoy. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt, and Adam Hurry. It was created and produced by James Bug. Thanks to Andy Gray for writing another book. But where are they all now? Well, Andy now works with BFF Richard Keys for Be In Sport. He's yet to those daughter, he's a football pundit, like Gary Neville. Ally McCoy's acting career sadly never took off, with just one more IMDb credit after A Shot at Glory. It was as a commentator on the US version of FIFA 2003, if you want to know. Martin Keown is still hated by Andy Gray, probably. The Holy City Zoo closed down and became Subway City. That's also closed down now. And Bruno Brooks is, at least up until 2020, the CEO and founder of Amedia, which creates bespoke music and visual content for the retail industry. Now, you know, the music Lobby Time is the work of Kevin MacLeod and is used on a Creative Commons 4.0 license. We'll be back in a fortnight. Until then, bye-bye.